The next case is 97-1742, disciplinary counsel versus Judge Urban J. Bandy. Mr. Paris.
Your Honor, I request 3 minutes time.
Okay, watch your time there on the clock.
Your Honor, there's 2 major issues I'd like to address on behalf of Mr. Bandy in this case. The first, I think, probably not much to see this arose out of his having one of the witnesses to the will, Secretary Merrill, former secretary of the will, asking him to sign the will after the proceeding step, after he had discussed about whether to verify that she had the will, that the was executed in 1990.
Actually, she was standing in a doorway some distance away in the office, is that correct?
In the doorway, fully visible, she testified she was here for seeing the execution of the will. There was no real issue.
She didn't know at the time that she was observing the execution of will.
That there was some cross-examination challenging that point that in her affidavit, and I think her reading of her testimony in the deposition was that she indeed believed it to be a will.
So you disagree with the relator's brief in which the relator indicates that she was told by Mr. Bandy later that was a will that she saw the person signing in the office.
That's not the case. Her own testimony is that she understood it to be a will. She knew Kenneth Merritt very well. She worked in the same office with him for a number of years. She knew that his wife died. She was back at that particular time. I think the material Mr. Merritt was in there executing what she believed herself to be a will. Now, the problem for Mr. Bandy rose in this whole area due to his clumsiness, and he did obviously regret this in his research on the issue of signatures of witnesses to a will. When he was asked by the executives, Mary Jo McDonald, his stepdaughter, to be the attorney to handle the estate, he at some point in time discovered that he himself had been a witness to this will. I explained in my statement of facts that this was done in haste and error on the day when he was leaving the office. He had not intended to be a witness. The secretary called him in to sign the document. He forgot at that time that this was the document he prepared for Mr. Merritt. This was an obvious error immediately used to where that's called. Now, at that point, when he did his research in Osher, his that time indicated that two witnesses need not be in the presence of each other. Well, this led him to erroneously conclude that if Deb Meredith did remember the will being signed, and felt that she could sign his will at a later date, there would be no proprietor or wrong in that fact. He met with Deb Meredith at a softball game in a small town. He saw her shortly thereafter, asked her if she remembered this. She indicated she remembered being there and remembered Mr. Meredith signing the will. He asked her if she would come to the office, and he requested, he showed her the original will, and requested that she would sign it. Did not instruct her, as was indicated in the response brief. It was not an instruction, it was a request. And this is all laid out in a further separate affidavit by Deborah Merritt that it was a full voluntary act in her part of what she believed. Now, obviously, this was an error of law, a significant error of law. But, however, I think a fair reading that the transcript indicates that this was not an intentional attempt by Mr. Bandy to try to deceive the probate court or anyone else for that matter. Significant point in that fact, I don't think this was brought up in the board's objections. He gave 2 copies of the will, one to the testator, or one to Mary Jo McDonald, and one to her daughter of the will with the 2 signatures. And obviously, he knew that these 2 copies were running around. He had gone over the will with the 2 signatures with the probate judge because wanted to make sure that in matters relating to personal property that he had right to purchase at an appraised value. We wanted to make sure that the appraisal was done fairly. The probate judge told him to send copies of all the probate papers to everyone. He knew this was definitely a high profile case in that small town. There was no way that he would do anything baldly and attempt to conceal something if he indeed thought this was a wrong thing he was doing. In point of fact, in just a few days after he took the will to the probate court, and one day after it was admitted, he received a letter from Mary Jo McDonald, fire agent, who was attorney for the estate. He immediately called Mr. Spriggs. Mr. Bandy, told Mr. Spriggs everything about the third signature. This was not in response to some query or some challenge by Mr. Spriggs. In fact, Mr. Spriggs was really somewhat reluctant to go into the details of the matter. And I think a fair reading of from the testimony, he doesn't appear in the transcript, is Mr. Bandy, even in talking to Mr. Spriggs, believed he had done the right thing. He did not believe that he had done something wrong. He thought, in fact, that what he had done and what he continued to believe until he was enlightened by Hyman, a probate law firm in the area, was in fact that he had preserved the testator's intent. An intent that included, and this is part of my other part of the issue, forgiveness of a $10,000 note, which is part of an overriding real estate deal that had been going on for years between him and the testator, as well as preserving the testator's intent, more significantly in Mr. Bandy's mind, to protect the interests of two non-blood beneficiaries, Mary Jo McDonald, the stepdaughter of the testator, and Mildred Meredith, his former sister-in-law.
Let me stop you there. Does the record indicate that Mr. Spriggs told Mr. Bandy when he told him that, called him and said that he was the new lawyer for the client, and was there any discussion about why the client wanted a new lawyer at all?
Mr. Bandy received a letter from Mary Jo McDonald explaining that she wanted an attorney. Mr. Spriggs. Mr. Bandy's, my recollection from the transcript, called Mr. Spriggs. He asked him if there were any problems with the estate. Now, in response to that, Mr. Spriggs did not bring up the concern about the third witness. Mr. Spriggs was aware that there was a discrepancy between the will filed with the probate court and the will that had been faxed to him by Mary Jo McDonald. But he didn't alert Mr. Bandy to any concern or he had regarding that. The whole conversation regarding the third witness was at the instance of Mr. Bandy immediately because he was concerned that he had protected the testator's interest in the East and West, and he explained what he had done with the third witness. And it wasn't being prompted or somehow being felt that he was neglected. It wasn't a confession where he was spilling his guts. He was telling what he thought he had done, which he felt was appropriate.
Does the letter from Ms. McDonald indicate why she didn't want Mr. Bandy to represent her any longer?
I think the concerns that they came out with, the concern Mr. Shackley was the beneficiary, I believe might have been mentioned in the will. In fact, I think there might have been a reference to this. She heavily involved in the estate.
So when he talked to Mr. Spriggs, he knew that Ms. McDonald was aware there was something with the fact that he was a beneficiary in this will.
Well, his understanding at the time was that she was unhappy with him because of the long delay in getting the estate started. She had been back in May. She herself brought the will to Mr. Bandy to ask him to be the attorney. Mrs. McDonald had obtained the will from her stepfather's home. It was in the testator's possession in the home. She brought it to Mr. Bandy. It wasn't solicited by him. She asked him to handle the estate. She had read the will. She knew everything about the forgiveness of $10,000, et cetera. Mary Jo McDonald, that was in May, and he had opened an estate checking account at that time. She lived up out in Arizona. You know, some of the things that the board found that they criticized, and apparently part of their opinion in criticizing Mr. Bandy, were totally irrelevant as to any misconduct. One that I found was the fact that he opened the estate account when the lady was here in Ohio, and that he put the amount of money owing on a mortgage. And somehow that was criticized by the fact that she had to get that appointed as executive. I see nothing wrong with that. As a matter of fact, I think that's just a practical thing to do. The board didn't seem to have done that. Another thing that the board took into account, which I thought was highly unusual, that there was a deed to Mr. and Mrs. Bandy from the Meredith's back in 1988 when they sold the home for Phillips property to Benz. That deed provided for a life estate to the Meredith's, which Mr. Meredith continued to live there until the time of his death. Now, Mr. Vandy, after the death, recorded an affidavit of transfer on the real estate that has absolutely nothing to do with probate. That's a purely ministerial, functional, perfunctory act that is not in any way construed as some sort of egregious or sneaky conduct. I think it was brought out of the Board's opinion as one of the factors that would be considered in the sanctions. Nevertheless, Mr. Vandy's feeling at the time when he was fired or discharged by Mrs. Meredith or Mrs. McDonald was that he had this delay. He got on a vacation in Florida. The probate judge also required waivers to be obtained from everyone before the property, and he thought she was unhappy at that with the delay, because she knew way back when it started, before he even brought the will into her, that he was the beneficiary of the will, so this was not some new surprise to her. Proceed with it. The first point in time when Mr. Vandy became aware of the significant errors in law that he made, when he had a conversation with him, or somewhat veiled in vague, he went to a law firm, Hyman & Hyman, in the local area that has specialization in the probate area, and learned that he has made some major blunders in his understanding of probate law. One, the fact that he was never included in his signing of the will as a witness, initiated the entire testimony and handed the testator. He realized that it only pension short of the $10,000 premiums in the him. Two, he found out at that time that he had made a serious error and believed that a witness could have the will signed after the death of the testator. Now, upon learning these facts, upon learning of his errors, he immediately renounced any interest he had in the estate. He paid the full mortgage that he owed, the remaining balance on $35,000 mortgage with interest. He paid the $10,000 note with interest. Now, as a consequence,
and he asked him not to turn in, right?
He denies that. Mr. Spriggs, he was confused about what Mr. Spriggs wanted. He thought Mr. Spriggs was concerned about personal property and was discussing a potential malpractice action sometime. Now, he did not respond to a letter that Mr. Spriggs wrote that he's been faulted. At that time, he had already discovered that there may be a potential accusation of ethics violations. He had gone to Hyman & Hyman, and he didn't respond to the letter. He had already renounced everything by that time, or was in the process of trying to straighten this matter out. He vigorously denied that it was his intention to try to.
So what do you think the punishment of it?
Well, we can see that very serious case in the law. I know that he is not a probate lawyer, a small town. His practice out primarily confined to the real estate area. I believe it was a third of my half of his testimony.
He didn't ordinarily draft wills for people.
He drafted wills, but he never paid enough attention to some of the fine points of what you don't do and don't do. There's still happens to a lot of lawyers.
Well, we have people go to lawyers. They can write their own will, so we'll find points.
That's correct. The difference between making a mistake and making an intentional intent to deceive the court is what I'm talking about. That there should be some sanction for clumsiness, for being careless, for being hasty, for not being careful. The court would have to decide what's appropriate, I feel. Mr. Vandy, I've noted that he has suffered some very serious consequences already. The $10,000 note that he that was forgiven in the will was clearly an intention of the testator at least 2 years prior to the time he even brought the will up. This was part and parcel of an overall business relationship between these two men, in which Mr. Meredith wanted that $10,000 note forgiven at death, but he wanted it in effect during his lifetime to reduce the capital gains consequences of the sale of the building. Also, it was kind of a way of getting some money in, and then he and his wife decided not to live very long in upstairs where they had their life estate. So Mr. Meredith very carefully thought about why he wanted to do it and the fact that he wanted to forgive the death. Mr. Vandy lost that opportunity by his blunder in preparing the will and by the other mistakes that he made. So that in itself is something that he would have defended, he would have enjoyed rightfully. He hasn't made these mistakes. I know that he's been in practice some 20-some years. He's never been before a disciplinary board. bring up a violation. There have been multiple character testimony at the hearing, character references and letters on his behalf. The people that he selected to be, give their opinion as to his character, because truthfulness were not people that had some superior dysfunction as a county court judge. There were people, prosecutors, a very solemn peer. Mr. Wiener, hardly, I believe, never appeared in this court, to my understanding. He, the board went way beyond what even the disciplinary council recommended. Finally, even in the interview, they suggested 6 months until the circumstances. They wanted the court properly understand the circumstances, that the court would find something more appropriate in the nature of a public record recommend. A man of 20 years of exemplary conduct in his profession should have some understanding when he says that he did not intend to deceive him. Should have some credibility in that. And I think the circumstances support him on that. So just a few days after he's filed a vote with the court, that he talked to Mr. Spriggs about it.
Your red light is...
I've probably gone beyond my time. I don't know where...
The red light means you've gone beyond your time.
I don't know if I can have a minute for the problem.
About 30 seconds. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Paris. Ms. Brown.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Lori Brown, counsel for Relator Disciplinary Council. The first argument made by counsel for respondents is that there was no intentional misrepresentation in securing the signature of Deborah Miracle. Relator submits that there was, in fact, intentional misrepresentation because Judge Bandy knew precisely what he was doing. He had a will with two signatures. Now, regardless of his misunderstanding of the law, he claims in his own testimony that he understood that with only two signatures, the entire will was invalid. That's not correct. The only bequests that were invalid by Ohio law were the bequests of himself. So nevertheless, regardless of his misunderstanding, he went purposefully to the ballpark that day. He didn't just happen to be at the ballpark and run into Deborah Miracle. He went to the ballpark, talked to Deborah Miracle, asked her to come into his office. She came into his office later that day, and at that point they discussed the will. Her testimony that was given in a deposition in the Office of Disciplinary Counsel is at page 28 of that deposition. Counsel for Relator asked her, "You knew you weren't really a witness to Mr. Meredith signing his will." Ms. Miracle responded, "I guess I just assumed it was a will, so I guess not." Now, any reading of that testimony, especially the reading in this case, is that yes, she in fact saw Mr. Meredith sign something that day. She assumed it was a will, but did she actually see the testator sign his will? There's some question. There is no evidence that she actually knew that it was a will at the time he signed it. So I think you have a number of different issues going on as far as intentional misrepresentation. First of all, he tried to make the will valid before he filed it with the court. Yes, he in fact did give a will with only two signatures on it to the heirs, to Ms. McDonald and her daughter. However, giving a will with two signatures, it was also a valid will. The only part of that will that wasn't in fact valid was his bequest. The only purpose for giving that will to the heirs was just to let them know what was in the will. He didn't intend, he at that point did not file that will. He didn't actually file a will until after he got Deborah Merrill's signature. And probably the most important part of this, the most important part of his thought process was that when he had Deborah Merrill sign the will in June of 1996, he did not put a date by her signature. He testified that he thought about it, but he did not actually do it. The second part, in response to Justice Moyer's question about why he was discharged, I think counsel referred to the fact that Ms. McDonald was concerned about the length of time that had gone by since she had heard from Mr. Bandy. It had gone by from May, right after Mr. Meredith's death, until July. She hadn't heard from him, and she knew Mr. Spriggs, called Mr. Spriggs, asked him to find out what was going on. He didn't want to do so until Ms. McDonald actually discharged Mr. Bandy, so she did so, and then at that point, Mr. Spriggs became involved in the case. She was also concerned, and she told Mr. Spriggs this, that she was concerned about the bequest to Mr. Bandy in the will. Ms. McDonald had no idea that the bequests were in fact invalid under Ohio law because he was a witness to the will. I think that if the court in this case looks at other cases that have been decided, there's an argument made by the respondent that he should not be suspended because there was in fact full disclosure to his client at the time he drafted the will. Relator submits that there was no full disclosure. He did not comply with the terms of DR 5-101. In fact, there was never any discussion with the client that this was probably improper, the client should probably get another lawyer. He just went ahead and drafted the document. So in that sense, he did not comply with 5-101. And the Galinas case, which was also decided prior to the adoption of 5101A2, says that if you violate 5-101 and you have also violated DR 1102A6, which is engaging in conduct that adversely reflects on your fitness to practice. As one final note, the respondent in this case has repeatedly brought up the point that he deposited money into the estate account, and he made that deposit on June 28, 1996, which is 3 or 4 days prior to actually filing the will in the probate court. But what I think you have to notice, and this is in the exhibits that are filed with the stipulations, I think that the court should realize that he actually paid back the estate $19,500. When the amount owed on the $35,000 note was $29,504. What he did at that point was subtract $10,000. So still at the end of June and into the middle of July, after he'd been fired and Spriggs had been hired, he still believed that his bequest of $10,000 was in fact valid. So there isn't any question that initially he believed that he had validated the will, his bequest included, by obtaining Deborah Merrill's signature after Kenny Meredith was dead.
The relator apparently at the board or at the panel recommended a six month suspension stayed. Now you're having to argue in favor of the board's recommendation.
I think, Your Honor, that I went back and copied the entire hearing transcript, and Mr. Alvin Matthews is counsel of record, and he says that that relator recommends a suspension. He doesn't say a suspension stay. And it's footnoted in our brief. I believe it's like page 267 of the transcript. We did, in fact, recommend an actual suspension, and we do, in fact, recommend a suspension. We do not, however, believe that an 18-month probationary period is necessary. There's no history of discipline here. We do not see a point or a reason for the 18-month probation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Mr. Parrish, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you. I didn't have sufficient time in my original remarks on special circumstances, which I feel present during the will. Mr. Bandy did not know. Maybe he should have known. He should have read the abuse decision. I don't think he was willing to come out in 1996. But maybe he should have been more aware of the fact that he shouldn't have done the will, that that judgment should be what he believed that was correct.
He had to do that, didn't he, by law?
Well, when he was aware that legally that he had done, that the will was invalid and that it could be validated without a signature, with his signature on it, he did what should be done legally, yes. He thought he had, point is, when he had put the work...
He didn't give up something to which he was entitled, I guess is my point.
The will with the two signatures on it, he would not have been entitled to validate the remaining will, but he didn't understand that.
Yeah, right. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Parrish. Use your time. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.